Curtain up, theater people, and welcome to your program, Is Your Ticket, coming to you from the Hell's Kitchen area of Midtown Manhattan. Normally, but today I'm recording in Chicago. I am out here working on my new musical, We the People, with my co-writer, my musical co-writer, Leo Schwartz. So, anyways, my name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your program, Is Your Ticket, is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, your program, Is Your Ticket, is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater and smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal in this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. I love theater and see as much as I can wherever I go. During the travels of the production of my husband and my play, Out the Flash, I've met many wonderful people from all over the world in the theater community, and it is my honor to bring them on as guests to the show. Today's guests are two terrific artists that David and I met when we did At the Flash at the International Dublin Gay Theatre Festival in Dublin, Ireland in 2014. The sensational, uber-talented Sean Denyer and Howard Lodge, both based in Dublin, Ireland. They run Acting Out, which is the resident LGBTQ drama group in the Outhouse in Dublin, Ireland. Now, I'll explain that a little bit, because in America, Outhouse means something a little bit different. But in Ireland, in Dublin, in this particular context, it's the equivalent of the lesbian and gay center that we would normally reference out here in America. But they'll talk a little bit more about that when they come on. Sean is the producer of Acting Out and one of the funniest writers I have ever heard, seen, and read. And Howard is a super sharp actor and the artistic director of Acting Out. And he also does a killer American accent. Let's see if I can get him to do it when I bring them on. And normally I would bring these guys on after my opening topic, but my opening topic is a description and some general information of modern theater in Ireland. So I'm going to bring them on first because there are names and people that I'm going to get a little tongue-tied on, so I'm going to bring on the experts. So, without further ado, please welcome to the show Acting Out's Artistic Director, Howard Lodge, and producer, Sean Denyer. Hi, Howard and Sean, and welcome to your program, Is Your Ticket.
Hello.
Hi, Sean.
Oh my gosh, it's totally my pleasure. These are two of the nicest guys and most supportive theater artists I have ever met in my entire life. I've always said, you guys, that our experience at the International Dublin Gay Theater Festival was one of acceptance and warmth. There was no competitive nature there. Everyone was just really super cool and really fun. And you guys really embodied that. So,
Very glad to hear that.
Oh yeah, it's totally true. And both David and I have thought that for the longest time. And by the way, David says hi.
Hi, David.
He's really sad that I had to go to Chicago because he wanted to be present while the interview was going on, but he's excited to listen to it. So, all right, so let's get to the opening topic. And guys, please forgive me if I butcher some of this, and don't hesitate to chime in if you have something to say about it, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll start with the mid-20th century. Now, Samuel Beckett is probably the most significant playwright of that time, and he had a long career as a novelist and a poet before his play Waiting for Godot, which came out in 1953, made him famous. This play, along with his second Endgame, is one of the great works of absurdist theater. Beckett was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1969. That's wild. Now, I don't know if I've ever actually heard of a writer being given a Nobel Prize when their focus is play. So do you guys have anything to say about that? I mean, did he do other stuff besides his?
He wrote short fiction and novels as well as kind of plays, but I think it was his plays that were being recognized. Didn't George Bernard Shaw win the Nobel Prize? I might be wrong there.
I'm sorry,
George Bernard Shaw.
Oh my gosh, Bob Dylan. I think he wrote the Nobel Prize. So that's got to be like a really, that's like the ultimate. Wow,
it is
amazing. Okay, Then the Lyric Theater was founded in 1944 by Austin Clark, and it was based in the Abbey until 1951 and produced many of Clark's own verse plays. Now, can you guys fill me in on the Abbey? Because in my mind, the Abbey is a gay bar in West Hollywood.
Well, the Abbey was kind of founded by a sort of group of progressive Irish artists, including W.B. Yeats, who also got the Nobel Prize, in fact, mainly for his poetry, but he also wrote plays as well. So it was established by him and a group of other kind of Irish artists who were interested in trying to sort of establish a sort of Irish artistic identity at a time when Ireland was still being ruled by Great Britain. So it came out of that kind of sort of revolutionary kind of roots. And, you know, many of sort of Ireland's kind of leading kind of playwrights, like Sean O'Casey, for example, had their kind of plays debuted there, and it's still going strong.
And it would now kind of identify itself as the National Theatre of Ireland.
Yes,
it would. Wow. So were they responsible for sort of bringing drama and theatre to, I don't want to say a different level, but to introducing it into a more modern frame?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there's always been a strong theatrical culture in Ireland, but perhaps not such a political one. They were very political. They had very definite aims and objectives in terms of getting independence for Ireland, rediscovering the sort of Celtic past and mythology. A lot of Yeats's plays draw on kind of Celtic mythology, for example. So they were very much about forging an Irish identity for theatre when they started. And it still has the kind of responsibility here of producing works from the canon. So, you know, their menu will always include some of the greats of sort of Irish literature. And some would view that as a bit of a blessing and a bit of a curse, because they have all this kind of great stuff which they're tied to doing, and some would feel they're not perhaps thinking about modern Ireland and the issues from a dramatic point of view that it's kind of facing.
That in America, what you're saying sort of translates into money. It means, and I know that's kind of crude, but like a lot of theater companies will have their, they need to bring in like sort of the war horses, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah, Beckett will sell out, for example. A new writer, you know, it's much more risky.
Right.
Even though the degree of public subsidy for somewhere like the Abbey is probably a lot greater than many kind of theatres in the States. So they have got a cushion generally, but still they have to get bums on seats. And also they do want to produce these kind of great works too. They draw in the audiences, so they're always have an eye to the bottom line too.
But I have to say that latterly, the artistic directors have taken the direction of trying to engage with the community a lot more in terms of staging feminist kind of drama, and also a theatre piece devised by a group of homeless people on that kind of endeavour.
Yeah, and they've got they have two new directors actually come from the National Theatre of Scotland, taken over the Abbey. And it would have a very sort of impressive track record in developing theatre in Scotland, where they didn't actually have a building. You know, they used theatres that were available in Scotland, or produced kind of drama in non-theatrical spaces. And they, kind of in the last year, they've come and taken over the Abbey. So we're sort of interested to see what they're going to be doing it. And they've already done some interesting things, like they're having the first preview of every show now is free.
Wow.
So if you queue up, you get there early enough, you will get a ticket. And that's great for opening up the theatre to audiences who, you know, who can't afford, you know, to go to the theatre.
Wow, that's amazing. That's
It's great. It's a great development.
We have, like, in America, we have, like, Rush, where you can go up and you know, get a cheaper ticket or lottery.
Yeah.
But it's never free.
Yeah.
You know, unless you win a contest or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, well, it's a new development here, and it's a very welcome one, I think. So.
Indeed. Okay, so we'll go to the 1950s. So from the mid-50s, the Unitarian Church at St. Stephen's Green, Dublin, was home to the, is it the Damer Theatre?
Yeah.
I pronounced it right. Okay, cool. and they produced both professional and amateur Irish language theatre. The world premiere of Brendan Behan's in Engail, which is translates to The Hostage.
Yeah.
Doing
well.
Okay, good. The S-E-A-N spelling of my name is really coming in handy here. Anyways, it took place in 1958. The theater closed in 1976. Behan went on to be an extremely popular dramatist, particularly through his work with Joan Littlewood's Theatre Royal in Stratford, East London. So that was beneficial for him.
Yeah.
Hopefully that brought out more playwrights and artists. I'm sure it did. Other important Irish dramatists of the period include Dennis Johnston, Thomas Kilroy, Tom Murphy, Hugh Leonard, Frank McGinnis, and John B. Keane. The 1970s and 80s brought a number of writers, actors, and directors who went on to be successful in London, Broadway, and Hollywood. And they include Edna Walsh, Joe O'Byrne, Peter Sheridan, Brian Friel, Stephen Ray. He's a popular name. Gary Hines, Martin McDonagh, Connor McPherson, and Gabriel Byrne. Now, I have to say that I've been reading great reviews of a script that Martin McDonagh wrote for a movie that stars Frances McDormand that came out.
Yes, I just saw a review of that. It sounds great.
Oh, my God. It's called Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, and I don't know about you guys, but I fucking love her. Anything she does, I'll
yes,
say.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it sounds like a good combination.
Oh, she is so, so good. So, and then, let's see, who else here? Gabriel Byrne. He's a known name in America. And
yes.
And Stephen Ray. Now, Stephen Ray, is that the same Stephen Ray that was in The Crying Game?
It is, yes. Yeah, he'd be primarily an actor, really, but he's also been involved in developing theatre and theatre companies. We just saw him, actually, very recently in Kilkenny. He was doing a reading of Oscar Wilde's De Profundis, accompanied by a string orchestra. So,
wow.
Yeah, which was great.
That sounds like...
And Conor McPherson, actually, he's just done... He directed and wrote the book for a show that's on in London using Bob Dylan's songs called Girl from the North Country, which is excellent, really excellent. It includes a lot of Irish actors in the cast.
I get so jealous that you guys get to see all that stuff out there. And it's so wonderful and highbrow and lovely and different and risk-taking but... I don't know. Do you guys get jealous when you see me sing stuff in New York? Because it would make me feel so much better if you did.
Yeah, okay, of course we did. Yes. No, we're always saying, we were going to that.
Even if you're humoring me, thank you so much. okay, the 1990s and 2000s brought a new wave of theater companies, including Barabbas. Yes. Barnstorm Theater Company, Bedrock, Blue Raincoat, Bespoke, The Corn Exchange, Corka Dorka, which I love that name. Fishamble, Cats Theater Group, Loose Cannon, Ouroboros, and Pan Pan.
Yeah.
And do you guys want to add anything to that?
I suppose of the newish ones, there's one called Theater Club, who are like very young, kind of go ahead, doing very sort of experimental stuff. it would be kind of one of the sort of newer ones. Malaprop, they're another group of kind of youngsters who are making their way.
That's terrific. One of the things that we like to do on this show is to promote the smaller, more intimate theater companies that don't actually get to be front and center as they should, because really, in essence, that's the majority of theater.
Yes, so. And for any of your listeners, your American listeners coming to Ireland in the next couple of weeks, Sean, in fact, the Dublin Fringe Festival is about to starts this weekend. And that's a real showcase for a lot of the sort of newer, younger sort of companies who are coming along. So anyone kind of visiting Ireland, there'll be loads of shows on to see over the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. I'm glad you brought that up. And I think between the three of us, one of us can probably find the website address for that. Unless you
exactly. Yeah, if you Google Dublin Fringe, it will come up immediately. Okay. So.
Groovy. Now, here is something that I read that I would like to get your guys' feedback on. It says here, a number of the companies that I just read off had a significant portion, or in some cases, all of their Arts Council funding at the beginning of 2010. And it remains to be seen if they will continue to operate. Now, that's something that I pulled offline.
It was partly there was a problem with obviously the financial crash, and it was also partly a difference in the way the Art Council began to operate, where they stopped funding companies per se, but they funded a few, like the big ones, like the Abbey and the Gate, the Corn Exchange, I think Rough Magic. Continued to get kind of long-term funding, mm-hmm. but everybody else then had to apply for project funding. So every time they had a play or a show they wanted to do, they had to apply for a specific grant for that piece, which meant they were having to apply every year, and it's created a lot of uncertainty in terms of long-term planning.
Mm-hmm.
But they are about to reverse that because they've seen it's caused a lot of problems. So they are going back to more of a model of funding companies for a more medium kind of to long-term, on a medium to long-term basis. And also the Taoiseach, the Prime Minister of Ireland, has committed himself to doubling funding to the arts over his kind of tenure. So,
wow.
Yes, people did suffer in terms of cutbacks, like every aspect of Irish society, but there is a recognition of what the arts do in terms of bringing tourists, but also sending out in terms of, touring internationally, sending out stories about Ireland and life in Ireland, and it's important to support that.
Wow. So I'm glad to hear that they're reversing that, and they've hopefully learned from their mistake.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, this is all talk at the moment, so the proof of the pudding will be in the eating, of course, but there does seem to be some recognition of the economic value, apart from anything else, of the arts and the arts sector.
That's okay. I have to bookmark this. Did you say the proof of the pudding will be in the eating? Of course.
Yeah. Yes.
I've never heard that. That's amazing.
You can put it in your next play.
By the way, I can tell that's Sean laughing, because Sean has one of the funnest, most infectious laughs I have ever heard. I think when we were out to dinner, I think we went to Joe Allen's. We met you guys there.
We did.
Yes, and I remember thinking, oh my god, his laugh is just so. it's great. And anyway, so and then of course there's Howard's American accent. So don't forget. I'm not gonna forget about that. Okay, now we've talked a lot about Ireland. Let's go ahead and talk about you guys.
Okay.
Why don't you both tell me a little bit about yourselves and your creative theater passion? And Let's start with Howard.
Yes, you start.
Okay, well, my interest in theatre was garnished from a young age. I began in kind of youth theatre in the town where I grew up, and I went on to study performing arts at university, and during that time was involved in a lot of amateur theatre, both as an actor and a director, and I got more and more into the directing as time progressed. When I moved to Dublin 10 years ago, I saw a gap in the market for an LGBTQ drama group and started acting out here, which remains the premier, I shall say, LGBTQ drama group here in Dublin, and we produce a couple of productions a year. And I'm also a trained drama therapist as well. And yes, that's my passion.
Now, drama therapy that's relatively new, isn't it?
It would be a discipline which has been going on probably since the kind of late 70s in the UK, but has kind of progressed across the Atlantic there to the States in the latter years. Yeah. But it's a relatively new kind of discipline. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a therapeutic healing process in which you use drama as the medium to explore issues for people who are wanting to explore stuff or are in distress of some sort. And it's not a traditional talk therapy. It's more of an obtuse approach, so that the client explores their issues through play and through scene work and improvisation and all of the theatrical techniques, basically.
Wow, that's. I know that out here it's a little more. I don't want to say cutting edge, but it's a little more new. And I've heard of people going into the field. So for the American listeners, it's nice to have an explanation of it as it builds in. I guess popularity is the wrong word, but as it builds in frequency.
So, yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Sure. Okay. All right, Sean, go ahead and let us know your creative theater passion and a little bit about you.
Okay. Well, I would have had a lot of sort of interest as a young person, youth, even into college in terms of acting and performing. But then my sort of professional life, I'm a physician doctor by trade, I kind of lost it. Although I always had a very strong interest in watching theatre, that kind of remained, and I was very passionate and regular attender of performance, but I wasn't a creator of it until after I met Howard and sort of began to get involved in some of the stuff he was doing. And before I knew it, I was really acting as the producer for Acting Out.
He was doing the bits that I don't like doing.
I wouldn't have had that word for it at the beginning, but I suddenly thought, well, this is actually what I am. And then I did some training and got some mentoring around being a producer through one of the schemes that's kind of operated here. And then I also became interested in writing more by default because we wanted to do a piece with the group. We didn't really have anything that fit the group. And so I said, I'll have a go at writing something. So I did, and I really enjoyed that. That's probably the thing I most enjoy, in fact. And so I started writing short pieces and then got to start writing a full length pieces, and have continued with that kind of since. So combining the writing and the producing with the occasional bit of performing when they need somebody middle aged and evil, which is surprisingly often.
Now, Sean, I remember your play Tits Up was what what was the entrant in the year that we were at at the Gay Theatre Festival.
That was our first play in the Dublin Gay Theatre Festival, which again, for your kind of listeners, is in fact the biggest LGBTQ theatre festival in the world. Surprisingly, held in Dublin every May for a couple of weeks, and it's a brilliant thing in that it kind of brings sort of companies from all over the world, including yourselves, to these shores, and it's a real chance for people to see what other people are doing. You know, because inevitably, sort of theatre for an LGBT audience is. Can be somewhat of a niche. I don't think it necessarily should be or is, but it's great to be able to see what other people are up to. So Tits Up was our first experience of being kind of in the theatre festival, and was a very happy one, I have to say.
Yeah. Oh my God, so funny! Mm-hmm. Like I love your dialogue. It's so clever and witty and acerbic. And I speak to you and you're so nice and warm. And I'm like, where does that come from?
It's all a facade.
Well, that's a great thing about writing though, isn't it, Sean? I mean, you'll know this, is that you can be all these things that you wouldn't be in your normal life, you know. I love that. I love being able to take on the guise of people who I wouldn't want to spend any time with whatsoever. You can write a character and, you know, it gives you a chance to get inside that kind of mind. So I really enjoyed that. So that was our kind of first festival. And we've been in the festival ever since then. And for the last 3 years, is it now, we've had the biggest selling show in the festival. So... which has been great.
That's amazing. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Okay, now you guys do so many different things. Individually, what do you consider your forte or your specialty?
Well, mine's definitely the writing and the producing.
And mine would be the directing.
Though. Yes. Yeah. That's how we divide things up.
Okay, cool.
I mean, there is a degree of overlap. Like Howard is very instrumental in terms of being a dramaturg or editor for my writing, I would say. He has a very critical eye.
Okay.
Which is, you know, which you need. And then I would also make inputs to things like the casting of shows and... you know, but we're kind of clear what the boundaries are, I guess. So at the end of the day, Howard makes decisions about the directing, even if I don't always agree. And at the end of the day, I make, if it's a play I've written rather than someone else's, I make the decisions about, you know, what is kept and what's lost.
And now you guys are a couple.
We are.
You are a couple. Okay. Yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead. Tell us a little bit about that.
Been a couple for 12 years, is it now? Mm-hmm. 12 years?
Something like that.
I can't forget. So that's how long we've been together. Drawn together partly by an interest, obviously, in theatre and performance and stuff. That was a very important, and continues to be an important part of our... of what we have in common. But we didn't make work together, did we?
No.
For the first couple of years. And I only sort of fell into it because Howard was actually directing. We were living in Sligo in the west of Ireland at the time, and Howard was had set up a group there, and somebody had fallen out of a play. It was The Real Inspector Hounds, in fact, by Tom Stoppard. And he said, oh, you're going to have to be in it.
Or not.
It's like, you know, 3 weeks to go before the show, you know. So I was in it, and that kind of, you know, I thought, oh, this is fun.
Nice.
And so then we started to sort of collaborate on stuff. And as I said, I started to kind of begin to write stuff, which then Howard's directed all of the plays I've done, I think. Is that right?
I think so.
Yes. So it's a very happy, it's a fruitful collaboration. I mean, some people say, is it not cause for tension? But I mean, we do have arguments sometimes about stuff, don't we? Mostly it's all about making something better. I mean, I don't know what you and David are like, Sean, but I value Howard's input. But I'm able to stand my ground.
I just do.
I just.
That's when you let him. Is that what you said? I was just gonna say I just do whatever David tells me to do. Now you've met him. I'll say the same. Yeah,
it must be a Sean thing.
I always like to say, you know, I married a princess. So, it was funny because like I've been working a lot on musicals, and he was like, "No more musicals. You need to write me another play." So guess what I'm doing next? Are there any particular messages and themes that speak strongly to you in the projects you select to write or produce or direct or just interpret in any way?
Well, our mission is definitely to present LGBT lives on an Irish stage. That is definitely what we're about. But within that gives you a huge scope, you know, so... even in terms of form of things, we try to find a form for something which fits what we want to do. So, sometimes it's been writing a sort of conventional play by me. Or, for example, we did a piece of work called Gay Dad, which was based on interviews with men about their relationships, gay men with their relationships with their fathers. And for that, we used verbatim kind of transcripts and assembled them into a piece. Howard's done quite a lot of devised pieces when he's wanted to get experiences of people in the group about life now. And we've done sort of queer classics as well. So we do a mix of in terms of what the form is, and we've done like the last show we did was a full scale kind of musical production because we wanted to do something which was a member of the group is a very talented songwriter, so we wanted to make use of that, and also we wanted to tell a story about gay pubs and clubs in the culture and how their position is changing from now and say maybe 20, 25 years ago. So we thought a musical was the best way to kind of tell that story.
Is that the Paradise Songs?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So bringing LGBT lives to an Irish audience, not just an LGBT audience. We want everyone to, and we definitely feel that any kind of theatre goer, anyone who likes going to see performance, would enjoy our stuff. But it's important for us that we are telling the stories of the LGBTQ community.
Okay, overall, just in theatre in general in Ireland, what do you think is an important direction theatre is taking right now?
I would say that there's kind of an acknowledgement now, more of an acknowledgement about the audience. And the audience isn't just like a passive crowd of people who are turning up for the pleasure of watching somebody's theatre production. Things are much more interactive now and immersive, and the audience are much more involved in the theatre and the making of that piece of theatre, which I think is a really good advancement.
Well, I'd have mixed feelings about that. myself. I think there's been a trend against the writer, definitely, which kind of as a writer I would have some qualms about, particularly in a country which is known for its writing culture. So there's definitely been a move towards more makers, you know, collaborative making of theatre, which is, you know, got many good things to it, but has been at a cost, in my view, to, you know, to encouraging the development of writing talent. Like the Abbey has a poor track record in developing new writers over the last few years. It's the kind of smaller theatres, there's a little tiny theatre above a pub here called the Theatre Upstairs, and they're doing a lot more in terms of developing new writers than some of the the bigger houses. The Gate Theatre, which is the other big theatre in Dublin, and would tend to be known for putting on classics, a lot of the American canon they do, but also classics from European theatre. You know, they've had very few new plays over the last decade. So it's definitely a trend to the more immersive, interactive stuff, as Howard was saying, and a lot that's really interesting. There's a really good company here called Anu, who have done some amazing stuff. They did an amazing piece set in, I don't know if you've heard of these things called Magdalen laundries, which were laundries run by nuns up until the 1970s, in fact, and were basically institutions for girls who had become pregnant or had mental health problems, and they basically kind of worked in these laundries, kind of run by nuns. And they were like prisons, really. And Anu did a fantastic piece, which was actually set in one of these old laundries, which was a very sort of interactive piece where you got split into individuals and you had an individual experience going around this piece. So they've been, you know, really interesting and sort of cutting edge sort of developments in kind of Irish theatre, and they've sort of entering the mainstream now too, because they've become an associate company with the Gate Theatre, who are a big theatre in Dublin. So that's what's been happening. But I feel there's a sort of trend back towards the writer. It's like it went so far. It's like the writers kind of didn't matter. Whereas I think it's sort of, my feeling is that that's coming back, and people are saying we need to be giving more attention to developing writers, particularly women writers, because there was a huge thing here, a movement called Waking the Feminists, which was started by somebody I know actually, who just did a quick check of how many of the plays being produced by the Abbey were either by women, directed or directed by women, and of course they were found to be failing, very significantly. So there is certainly a much greater push to get women writers and people from not traditional communities within Ireland. So Ireland now has a big immigrant community, which it never traditionally had. It was a country that people left rather than move to, but that's not true now, you know. So there's a lot more interest in developing work which reflects the experience of the people who are currently living here, whether they were born here or they came here, and then also looking at the voices of women. Still a lot to do on that score, but there is at least the recognition and some kind of progress kind of being made in terms of evening up the opportunities for people.
And I would think that we could probably thank the smaller theater companies, the smaller houses for those opportunities.
Definitely, because you know, certainly the bigger ones were stuck in a rut, you know, and the kind of smaller ones have been the ones making the more interesting and challenging kind of pieces and saying, you know, you lot have to change, you know, if you're going to stay relevant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even most of the big, as I had said before, the big Warhorse pieces, they all started off small as well. So
Of course they did, yeah, and they were, like, radical, and there were, like, riots outside of, you know, when the Plough and the Stars by Shauna Cases were first put on, there was a riot outside the Abbey, you know. Yeah, they're having to think again about how they engage people and make stuff that actually... you know, talks to people and gives people opportunities to see what's on. Like I said, this initiative of having the first preview of every play now at the Abbey is free. You just have to queue up. You know, it is a great way of making it more democratic.
Hmm. Okay, Howard, let's have you answer this question first. What should every theatrical artist, actor, writer, director, administrator, be doing right now to be relevant and successful in the industry?
Well, I think they should be kind of supporting the local scene and seeing as much stuff as they can and keeping up with new writing.
I'll tell you what I think, yes, you need to do that. See as much as you can. I always say that to people, you know, go to everything. But I also think do what you want to do, because you can be told that, oh, what you're doing isn't the trend, it isn't, you know, what's in right now. But I think if you continue to do stuff, people will come, that's good and interesting, people will come to you, you know. You've got to keep your vision and not try and anticipate a trend or try to ride the crest of it, you know, because trends come and go. You know, I think you need to stick to your own vision and kind of bring people with you, you know. And I think that's to an extent what we have done with the group, isn't it? Because, you know, now, as I said, you know, we've been in the Gay Theatre Festival, we've had the biggest selling show the last 3 years, and that's because we've built an audience and we've developed a, you know, people know they're going to come to see our show and they're going to enjoy it, or they're going to get something out of it. And, you know, I think you have to stay true to yourself and not worry too much about what the latest thing is, you know, because the latest thing will be different, you know, next year.
Okay. Excellent answer. Excellent answer. Both of those answers are excellent. Okay. Now, before I ask you what you're working on, you know, that's new right now, and to give our audience your social information, do you guys want to do a speed round with me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it'd be great to do like an Irish speed round, because all my speed rounds have been American. You guys are my first international guests. I want you to know.
Oh, we're so honored.
Oh my God, I know. I should have said that. Like, I should have led with that, but there it is. I got it in. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you a series of questions and try to answer as quickly as you can. And Howard, would you give your answers in your American accent? Please.
I don't know where this mythology of my American accent has come from.
It's come from David. It's David. He's like, David's always bragging about your American accent.
Seriously, I must have been drunk, and I'm not drunk now. So,
well, can you give it a shot?
Okay.
Okay. Come on, you are an actor, and you are an actor who also incorporates therapy. So, just pretend like I need it to get through the day.
Okay.
It's the uplifting support that I need to get through my day. Okay. We'll even let Sean start, and then you can give your answer second, so you have some time to formulate it in your mind. Okay. All right. Ready?
Yes.
Okay. All right. What's your favorite play?
Angels in America.
Yeah, ditto.
I'm sorry, what was the name of that play? Howard?
Oh, it was ditto. It was Angels in America also.
Come on now, say it with the American accent, please.
It's an American play, Howard.
I can't do it.
He's failed the audition.
Okay. All right. I'll give you one more chance in a further question. Not a question. I'll have you deliver your social media information in your American accent, okay? Anybody can. I can do that in Irish accent. I'm horrible with accents.
Okay.
So for favorite play, you both said Angels in America. Favorite musical?
Cabaret.
Oh, you've got me there. I'd say, only because I've just seen it, Follies.
Okay. Favorite writer?
Favorite writer? Contemporary or past?
Either one.
Either one. Favorite contemporary? Enda Walsh.
Martin McDonagh.
Okay. Director?
Ivan van Hove, the Belgian Dutch man.
He's big out in America.
Howard Lodge.
Oh my god, love it. Okay. Okay, mentor.
Sean Denyer.
It would be, I got the chance to be mentored by a great kind of producer in Ireland called Diego Prescatti, who worked for Rough Magic, and he was such a help to me.
Excellent. Cool. All righty. Well, that's terrific. Great answers, by the way. And now let's move on to what you're working on right now, or if there's anything you want to talk about that you're doing in the future.
Okay.
Well, we're just about to return from the summer recess, and we will be starting rehearsals for a kind of cabaret showcase Christmas extravaganza, I'd call it. We put out a call for short scenes which had an LGBTQ theme and also a Christmas theme, and we're going to put them together into a showcase evening. So we'll be starting work on that.
And it's a good chance to get new writers in as well, you know, so people get a bit intimidated at the thought of, like, writing a whole play. But, you know, a 10-minute piece is something people feel they can have a go at. So we want to develop and build new writers who'll do work for the group. And it doesn't just have to be, you know, because I have a voice, a particular voice, but we want other voices in it. In the group too, you know. And then I've just finished a play. It's just about finished, which we'll hope. We'll submit for the Dublin Gay Theatre Festival. Hopefully.
Next year is actually the 25th anniversary of the decriminalisation of homosexuality in Ireland.
Wow!
So. We hope to do some kind of historical kind of retrospective on episodes from gay life in Ireland and put that together into some form of production. So,
and it's also the 10th anniversary of Acting Out next year. So we want to mark it with that. So yes, lots going on.
And I saw that you put a post on Facebook saying that you're starting up again. And
we are.
And you were asking for I want to say, like, talent and involvement. And did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, we're starting up on the 14th of September on a Thursday night in the Outhouse, which is the LGBTQ community centre in Dublin. That's where we kind of meet to rehearse. Howard has a very open attitude to people joining the group, so he doesn't do auditions. Anyone can come along, because the view would be that there's a kind of performer in everybody, And people who come along are always like really surprised that they can just come. Yeah, you know, and of course, when it comes to casting, you know, we obviously, we obviously think who's kind of best suited to the role, but it's very important that it's kind of open to everybody, because we've had some incredible performers in the group who have never done a day's acting in their life until joining the group. And they really developed into amazing performers. So that's the kind of philosophy, I'd say.
Now, is that just for performers, or do you invite people in to be technicians and to work administrative things?
Job? Well, we would be very open to that. We'd be delighted, but we find that most people want to come and perform if they want to join the group. We have got people through people that have joined the group who have subsequently become more involved in the kind of backstage activity. And we have
production side, yeah.
Yeah, and we had one of the good things about the group also is that several people within the group have gone on to do further training in performing arts in different ways. So, for example, one put the woman who was involved in doing the tech stuff, the lights and sound for the group, she went off to the Lear Academy, which is the conservatory in Dublin for training.
Are you talking about Hannah?
Yes.
Oh, I love Hannah. She worked lights for At the Flash. She was so great.
Yeah, well, she went to the Lear and did a kind of stage, backstage technical degree for 3 years. And she's just come back to us. Fully trained and telling us what to do. which is great. There's another thing we love about the group is that it's like a springboard for people. You know, like there's another, we have a very talented member of the group who has started his own sort of cabaret nights. He's got one just coming up, actually. And that's sort of something he's done on his own initiative, having been supported by the group and developed his confidence around kind of doing that stuff. So we love the sort of side projects that are shooting off from the group as well. You know, and I think it just shows when you give people an opportunity, you know, what they can do.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, so many theater groups are so insulated and exclusive.
That's another thing about totally. With starting the group is a lot of a lot of theatre groups have a lot of LGBTQ people in them, you know. But, you know, some of them would say, well, they were very typecast, or they were given a certain sort of role, or they were never given the lead romantic role, or, you know. So I suppose that's another thing our group does. It gives them the chance to be the star, you know, of the pieces we're developing. We're telling their stories, and so, you know, they're the ones that want to tell them.
I've only met one person that was okay being, you know, spear carrier number three or playing Reverend Harper in Arsenic and Old Lace, and he's our friend Andy Wisbacher, who only went into theater in high school because he said he joined every single club to be popular. And so now we, whenever somebody comes in and like has three lines and like steals the whole show, we say that he or she went to the Andy Wisbacher School of Acting. I'm sorry, I digress. I just love that story. But, you know, and I think that's great. And I totally agree with you that that it's nice to be able to give actors and artists new opportunities to play different characters. I think that, I mean, I've said this before, but I don't know, Jane Lynch, the actor who was on Glee. She, in her book, I read that she says that every character is in every actor. You just have to find it.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that we're seeing a lot of that with anti-type casting and non-traditional casting and colorblind casting and
That's we're talking about trends. That's a definite trend here.
Right.
Too, you know?
So, okay.
That's great.
Alrighty then, why don't you go ahead and please, Howard, please do this for me. Give our audience your social media information in your American accent.
Do you know what our social media information
no,
is, Howard?
I have no idea.
It's not the kind of thing he knows.
I'm just not going to get it, am I? Wow.
I will tell you, Sean.
Okay, good. Can you do it in your American
accent? I think what, Sean, this is even better. We'll get Sean to do it in his Manchester accent.
No, no one will understand.
Because it's really pretty good.
No, nobody in America will understand.
Okay, so let's do it this way, Sean.
Yes, the best way to find out about what we're doing and to see photos of productions we've done and listen to some of the songs that have been in the kind of musical things we've done is our website, which that'll have links to Twitter and Facebook and all the other bits too. And that is www.actingoutgroup.com.
Okay. Once, just say that in the American accent, please, Howard. I've been begging the entire time. I'm doing this for my husband, by the way.
I'm a bit frightened now. Okay. So that's www.actingoutgroup.com.
That's it?
Oh, my gosh. Yay! Okay, I begged for it. I begged for it.
Did I get the part?
You do. You get the part. Mostly because your husband probably wrote the script. Actually, he did write the script. Because...
you'll start an argument then. Right.
Well, you guys have just been absolutely delightful, and we've learned.
It's a pleasure. Love to speak to you, yeah, and love to David.
Oh, of course, and love back. It was just wonderful hearing so much about a theater culture that we don't experience in America as much, and only through the occasional Irish play that's performed. Out here, and learning the history and where the priorities are over there. It's just been delightful. So thank you so much for being on your program as your ticket, Sean and Howard, and being my first international guest. You guys were awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Okay. At the end of each show, I like to give a shout out to current productions that I feel are worth a recommendation. On tonight's episode, I'd like to recommend a show that David and I saw on a recent trip to Washington, D.C. We went last week. We saw Big Fish, the musical, at the Keegan Theater in the DuPont Circle area of D.C. Now, this is Big Fish, the musical, has a book by John August and music and lyrics by Andrew Lipa, very, very popular lyricist, musician, musical writer, sorry. And this production is directed by Mark A. Ray and Colin Smith, co-directors, music direction by Jake Null, and choreography by Rachel Lee Dolan. It's based on the celebrated novel by Daniel Wallace and the acclaimed film directed by Tim Burton. Big Fish centers around Edward Bloom, a traveling salesman who lives life to its fullest. Edward's incredible larger-than-life stories thrill everyone around him, most of all, his devoted wife, Sandra. But their son, Will, about to have a child of his own, is determined to find the truth behind his father's epic tales. Overflowing with heart and humor, Big Fish reminds us why we love going to the theater, for an experience that's richer, funnier, and more extraordinary than life itself. It's a heartfelt story, and it's one that you can take young folks and senior folks alike. There are strong performances and creative direction and stagecraft. Very, very creative for the size of theater that it's in. It's been extended to September 9th, so you only have a few more days to go. Again, it's located at the Keegan Theater, and you can visit keegantheater.com. That's K-E-E-G-A-N Theater with an R-E, like they spell it in Ireland, for tickets and information. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. I'd like to thank my guests, my brilliant, wonderful friends, Sean Denyer and Howard Lodge. You guys were amazing. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at facebook.com/programisyourticket. You can find me on Twitter at programticket, and the website is, you guessed it, yourprogramisyourticket.com. I'm on iTunes and SoundCloud. Rate me, write me a review. I'm a writer. I can take it. I get reviews all the time. So go ahead, do that. I would appreciate that. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week, and don't forget to give a smaller show some love. There's lots of theater gems out there. Until our next show, good night, theater people, and curtain.